Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live on air on Close Up Radio, the award-winning service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television Radio. Noon Eastern here at the Broadcast Center, 9 a.m. Pacific, and it is Wednesday, October 6th, 2021 at the time of this broadcast. And we thank you very much, everybody all around the world, for tuning in to our broadcast series. Stay tuned. We've got an amazing day of incredible episodes that are coming up. And right now, we're very excited to welcome back Heather Rawlings-Davis to Close Up Radio. Close Up Radio usually features interviews with entrepreneurs who are making a difference, but every now and then, we give our guests a platform to share an incredible story. Heather Rawlings-Davis has been previously featured as a special guest right here on Close Up Radio as the founder of Pollywogs and Camp Chocolate. But on this show, this particular episode, Heather will share her personal battle with complications from a life-saving medical device implant. According to Heather, Johnson & Johnson, Mentor, and Ethicon do not have any standards of care for women with these devices that are not clearly defined become susceptible to greater risk of injuries. By 2012, there were already indications that these devices may actually increase the risk of cancer. Still, there were no standards of care or preventative measures to take, nor any post-surgical instructions of what Heather's life would be like as a result of having the device. So Class 3 life-saving medical devices come with lifetime warranties, according to Heather. She called the hotline in the back of the card, but no response, and that company had been sold off, and the lifetime warranty had been purchased by Johnson & Johnson. She asked them for a written copy of the standards of treatment and care, as well as the protocol of treatment, and she said they really couldn't provide that in writing. So when a device with a lifetime warranty does not have the written standards of care, what can a woman do? Heather has turned everywhere for help and been refused by numerous attorneys. And even former Governor Scott Walker, Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson. So Heather's ultimate goal is to shine a light on what's happening to her in the hopes that she can find some resolution. She says this is a bigger woman's health issue that has not been addressed or discussed. She's going to share some of her own personal story and her own personal journey with us live and direct from Wisconsin. Let's welcome back to Close Up Radio our special guest, Heather Rawlings-Davis. Heather, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I hope you're doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me to your show.
You're very, very welcome. Tell us a little bit about the device itself for people who are not familiar with it. Why would somebody need this particular device, Heather?
Well, there's a in women's healthcare, they have I'm going to introduce that before I had a device, there were radiologists who, when looking at surgical options or surgery for all different reasons, and not to misrepresent anybody, for various reasons, whether it's personal. The medical community is very private. You know, the patient has so many privacy rights as well as HIPAA. And for that reason, for the many reasons that people are with implants or other medical treatment, in my situation, there was a radiologist. And the radiologist did every kind of pretesting from mammographies to other radiological tests to determine, it's not so much, it's not only the necessity, but they also determine, and they could make a determination of what device is appropriate as well. But they rule out that radiology before any surgeon gets involved is ruled out that the patient is with cancer, that it is all the other factors that they would be at risk for. So So the radiologist basically not really pre-selected, but said this person is not only be capable of surgery, but they're approved for surgery.
That's amazing. So your situation, what has happened since your surgery with respect to this particular device, Heather?
As a surgical patient, most surgical patients are with a contract. And in those contracts, there are contractual terms. And one of the biggest concerns was that initially, and why the device was to be, popular, but accepted within medical societies, was that it was to be an FDA device, as well it was to reduce the risk of cancer. That's stated by both the surgeon, the medical providers involved, as well as by contract, and it would be probably best described as their communication with the organization.
So some of the things that you found issue with this device are obviously the things that are wrong with it. What is wrong from your perspective with this particular device, Heather?
Well, first of all, one of the biggest important things for any patient is communication, and there's been a lot of miscommunication that's taken place. And there shouldn't be ever a time where the patient feels at fault. Patients definitely are at risk, and it's also patients, it's not their fault. I think because I think in a way of doing something as a patient that I've always thought about, and I will clarify myself. I am an ex-wife of a cancer specialist. That does not rid me of any cancer specifically. I mean, it doesn't, I'm not connected to either way, but I will clarify that I was in a relationship for 25 years with a very loving husband and father of my children. So I will indicate that. He as well has given me permission, and I've discussed this with some of the other team members. It wasn't that I needed permission, but it's really important that when discussing in any counseling situation, that when someone's going through the battle that I am, that it's made to be my battle and not him going to work every day. And that was really important in not just the separation or eventually the dissolve of our relationship as a couple, but it was very important to determine that it was important in that it was not just about the battle being important enough, but there is practitioners and medical providers that are physicians who want to be of assistance, but it's a very it's been very difficult because of how big companies are. I mean, not to discuss Facebook, not to be connected to them. I've even shut that off, any connection, because I'm not going to be relating or connecting to Facebook as to why I'm being presented on the show today. I'm not here to be a whistleblower. I'm not here to be I'm definitely a patient advocate. I've always been that. Also a business professional that has had sometimes you receive more criticism trying to communicate what's necessary, or even sometimes people refuse, they'll shut the medical doors because it's kind of a taller issue than some people want to argue, and they have a right to refuse people for care in certain states. And that's not their patient. And it's important because there's ethics. I mean, there's a list of things involved. Kind of at the beginning in 2009, the decision was made for surgery. I had surgery. I was with that contract that said there is a reduced risk of cancer. And after 2009, you ended up talking, like you had said, that you called the hotline, and the hotline was of no assistance. On the back of the card, you were supposed to receive some kind of assistance. Like you said, the written communication wasn't there. So I started talking to some other people and found out that, not mistakenly, but I've also had a 100-page HIPAA violation on my medical record. And that HIPAA violation was regarding a 100-page congressional review that discussed that some of the concerns and possible of cancer diagnosis, and that was dated by a Nelson et al. 2018. And there hasn't been a lot of direction by any kind of governing body or agency that says this is what the care is. There are no protocols for cancer testing. There is not knowledge by everyone that they should take what they call a CD30 test. They don't inform other practitioners of what other kind of possible blood work testing that can be done, because that's relevant. That was relevant in my case as well. There are surgeons that receive phone calls from patients, and in my situation as well, the surgeon was suspended, and my chart till this day has what they call a surgical medical lock, meaning the original chart stays in the state by law. It stays in the state, the original chart, and it gets locked, and it's very difficult for me or for any attorney as well to access that document. And that makes it really difficult to receive any kind of health care, or it makes it difficult to receive as high quality that we have in the United States.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating, the way you're sort of deducing it and presenting it on the show today. I know sometimes it's not easy to do, but you've chosen to express this in a public forum. Tell us about that, your decision. Was it something you knew you wanted to do, or is it something that you were wrestling with to go public on a platform like Close Up Radio?
Well, I chose to do it for a couple reasons. I think the first and foremost reason was, first of all, the Obama administration has made it possible to look at research documents. That's not how the congressional review ended up on my chart. But it is fortunate that as an American, we are with rights not only to do, it's not just about doing research, and it's not coming up with our own research. There's confusion in that, and I want to clarify that as well. When walking into a medical community, I had a pulmonologist nurse pick up the phone and talking with her and scheduling an appointment. They had said, I don't know if you know this or aware of this or not, but you've got a 100-page HIPAA violation on your medical Epic chart. And I was not aware of that. I was not aware that anything had been posted, published, or printed on my medical Epic record. And then I started being, as much as I'm an advocate for patient care, I became a self-advocate, very much so. And that's where I tried talking with my congresspeople. And I found out that initially the first was is that we can't help you with it. The Attorney General, the Attorney General of the State of Wisconsin, has been helpful in a sense that they argue that and say, well, it is definitely personal injury and you have our permission, but we cannot get involved with a personal medical issue. And it's frustrating because some places, like let's say the Wisconsin Medical Society, they have a limited scope in getting involved with any of it. Because they would say that, again, it's not only HIPAA, they'd say in my instance is that you need permission from a medical doctor who is a member, because medical doctors are members of a medical society, of how to get involved, of giving them permission to find a legal way of arguing it. So you have all these societies and all these organizations that are in business for patients. These societies, even physicians, exist as businessmen and women because of patients. And I realized, and not being shared stories about specific people, but once in a while you've got a person that comes up to you, and you could be at a grocery store, a Walmart, a specialty store, and someone comes up to you and said, "I had the most incredible experience and caring experience from your husband. Thank you for giving up your time with him on a Sunday so he could come in and take care of a very big concern that now they've received some relief on." And normally I didn't ask them their name. I just said, "Thank you. I appreciate it. And so does he. And so does my family." And that was kind of my brief interaction with other people. That was always to the extent. And then what I started hearing was, "We can't help you. We won't see you in clinic. We're not going to run this test. You need to talk to some other kind of a psychological expert. You must not know what you're talking about." I mean, all the negative phrases in regards to that. And I thought, you know what? I guess if that's going to invigorate me or ignite something about passion, about where that first starts with people in any medical community, and I've had the opportunity to work in a medical community a long time ago myself, and that is about being the biggest patient advocate that there ever was. That's what I know how to do well. I know how to be supportive. I know how to feel like, I know what it feels like as a family member. And it's not just the husband. It's also being surrounded by 6 or 7 physicians in my family. And this time you kind of said, you know what? I'm putting my foot down. I'm not going to feel taken for granted. I'm going to knock on every door. And if they shut them, then go ahead. But I'm looking, you know, this is what you start realizing. What is it going to take? What are you looking for? That persuasive, you know, where that persuasive go, what needs to happen? And it's interesting because once I had talked to your radio program before today, and I have received such open and welcomeness to communicate, and I am so appreciative and thankful for that. And what I've realized out of that response, both probably negative and positive experiences, is that I found myself doing something even more important. I found that there has been a Women's Health Protection Act in March of 2017 by 5 Democrat congressional community of people that said every woman deserves this right. They deserve the right to communicate about not about themselves, but about their rights as medical patients, about their rights as people. I shouldn't feel any more or less empowered than anybody else. And I also realize that if being connected to the physicians that I've been connected to, if that gives me an opportunity, then so be it. I should use that for my benefit. That doesn't mean I use their families or use their professions. That means I should use that to open doors to other things. And I think it becomes a surprise to some people because bringing up that fact about the research and the Obama administration, at the time of the administration where he was in Houston, Texas, I don't know if everybody remembers the media there, he was in Houston, Texas, and there the administration goal was to end all cancers. Maybe I'm kind of phrasing that or not representing that well, but that's what it felt like. It was about investing dollars into combating cancers, fighting cancers. And it was that news media where I picked up the phone and I called MD Anderson in Houston, and I became initially a patient on the phone. I was given a patient ID number, a patient phone, and I said, "There is a YouTube with a specialized doctor there that was talking about the different kinds of carcinomas that were happening or that were being created or were produced from possibly the device itself." And that is in that Nelson document. It is in these other papers. And I said, "That's what I need to do. I need to meet with the biggest or one of the best experts that has acknowledged this." on YouTube, on social media. It wasn't within a week later I called and they said, sorry, we can't see you in clinic, so don't plan to come here or get on a flight to come down to be referred to our clinic because he's not going to see you in clinic. He doesn't have a clinic. There was no clinic established for patients like you. And I thought, at the time, you can imagine my heart just sank. Here it was, I thought I had one of the best expert connections in the world, and that ended. And, you know, everything becomes frozen in time as an individual. And, you know, from there, it's been people are trying to communicate online. They're trying to talk to one another. They're trying to connect via websites and blogs and other things. And I thought, if there wasn't a clinic established, why isn't there one? And I think that part of what my persuasion is that as much as there's talk and paperwork, there doesn't, and without being misrepresented, there is not a clinic, there is not a women's clinic in the United States for women like me. A woman with a Class 3 medical life-saving device that is having medical issues or medical complications, there has been no clinics established, no matter what's been written. And something needs to be done.
So it sounds like a very tight spot, and there needs to be some sort of response. It's really a tough spot that you're in here. And what do you see as a silver lining, if any, going forward? You said there's been some positive responses. Are those generally coming from the public at large or other people sharing similar stories with you?
There's been some of the similar stories. I think the biggest is that there needs to be some other kind of ability for the legal community to act. I think that there has been, I think another big closed doors is that I think sometimes there are, and this is going to be a very personal statement, but I think sometimes lawyers, as much as there's a privacy policy, it's like, really? I mean... Doctors in all different levels, sometimes they just roll up their sleeves and they get in there. You know, there's actions in this country, just like in, unfortunately, talk about COVID too much because that's a whole other program. But, you know, people rolled up their sleeves and they got involved and they did what they needed to do. They got business done. They didn't think about what was going to cost. They didn't think about the money involved. They didn't think about big corporations' response. They just rolled up their sleeves and they got business done. They looked at it as an opportunity that there is research out there. There's also names of pathology or blood labs, for instance, and no one's picked up the phone and called them. If he's so involved in a program, why hasn't anybody called him? Not called him out or called him personally or, you know, made any comments regarding his political affiliations, but said, we need some assistance. There is a need for data collection regarding a group of women and for whether it's even an ad that gets put out that says, in my case, after talking with them or my persistence has led to calling their organization and them saying, no, there is no standard, but we want to give you a medical claim number for your injury. And that was a huge step for their organization, as large as they are and as diverse as their organization is. That being very positive, as long as something's taken, persistence is key and persistence does win in that regard. And to still acknowledge for people, as frustrating as something is, medicine, as much as it's a caring profession, it is a business. And I notice some people, they get really emotional or hurt by that, but medicine is a business. It's driven just like anything else. The only other occupation that some people in different and different medical and ethic boards of people might say education. But education is starting to change a little bit too, because we have more, not so much homeschooling, but we have other schools that are tuition-based. And I'm not talking about a higher level education. I'm talking about, as much as public education in this country is free public education community, we also are with schools that are tuition-based. That means they're going to have other governing bodies, other different than traditional models of education. So it's not to be it shouldn't, you know, as big as somebody like Johnson & Johnson, Ethicon is, they're also in business for patients. And as scary and as frustrating that is, that's why someone needs to keep knocking, because it's their health, it's their body, but it's also their accountability and their responsibility to do that. And there's people like me, or there's other people that have been supportive of my cause to keep, they're not fueling an argument. That motivation also has to come within, because when you start realizing that people close doors and someone says, we've got the biggest country that has the most possibilities or endless possibilities, and then they shut those doors, you're like, wait a minute, something's not right here. That, you know, not every physician's busy every minute of the day. You'd like to think that too. As busy as practices are, there's people who are idle that can be of assistance. And I think sometimes it's difficult, because it's hard to know who those physicians are that will apply themselves as well. There has to be a community of professionals who are with the knowledge, who are with the investigative ability, who are with research ability to say, I'm going to take this on. I am willing to be kind of going back to that drawing board, or even to those grand rounds, and saying, I'm willing to take this argument head on. And I'm not going to worry about somebody else's opinion of me as a practitioner, as a family person, as a care provider. Because there's people that need some assistance, and it's not going to be, it might not be the award-winning program. It might not get them their Nobel Peace Prize, but it's going to help it's ultimately going to help probably a smaller group of women what they realize. Maybe it's a subset, but what they are going to do is they are going to drive into not just a local and state, but a global body of knowledge. They are going to then say, these are the professional standards we are going to put forth. And not only are they going to be welcome to do that, it's probably going to be done by physicians that aren't connected or affiliated with the pharmaceutical organizations. But they have to feel welcome to do that. They have to feel free to do that. And just like we're talking about liberating, that's just that. Yeah. How do you do something without stepping on toes? How do they do that?
We've got about 60 seconds left. What can listeners do to help?
One of the important is to talk to their primary healthcare provider and make it known to them. A lot of people, once they realize there aren't any standards, they shut down. One of the things that I found out, too, in regarding this Nelson study, was this complication that can exist from MRIs, too. And that's not the initial course of action or treatment. And that's something they need to talk to their medical provider. If they have a Class 3 medical life-saving device that's been defined by any medical society organization, they should not receive any MRI without talking to a physician, their local medical care provider.
It was a pleasure having you on, Heather. Very eye-opening conversation for sure. And wish you continued good health and good luck with everything. Thanks for joining us on the show today and being so open and authentic. We appreciate it.
I'm a very appreciative, and I'm appreciative of the opportunity and what you've done for not only the empowerment of women, but for people to communicate as a global citizenry of how we can live better quality life.
Our pleasure, Heather, our pleasure. You keep the faith and keep moving forward. And again, thank you so much for spending the time with us here and sharing this story on Close Up Radio. Again, our very special guest, Heather Rawlings Davis. I'm your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, the entire episode is archived on our, is fully recorded and archived, so you can hear this episode and share it with those you think would benefit from it as well. I also invite you to stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another amazing guest celebrated right here for you on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, thanks for being with us. Have a terrific day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.